Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Our thanks to John McClain from the Houston Chronicle who joined us in the previous half hour as John gave us a very poignant update on what's going on in Houston. One thing that's interesting from a sports point of view, none of the sports facilities are hit by this. In fact, the Toyota Center has been used as an evacuation area. But NRG Stadium, Minute Maid Park, and they're going to be playing baseball there this weekend and football there next week. They said for the players, it was a relief for them to get back and just be there and be back because they felt helpless on the road. Play-by-play call of the day. Nationals beat Miami 4-0 last night. Steven Strasburg pitched it, and he also hit it.
Andy Santana, Soto home. Here's the pitch to Strasburg, driven in the air to deep right center field. Yelich going back, way back, looking up. It is gone. Goodbye. Steven Strasburg with his second home run of the year. His fourth career round tripper over the big wall into right center field. Bang! Zoom goes Steven Strasburg.
Call on WJFK and the Nationals radio network last night as the Nationals beat the Marlins 4-0. Strasburg hit more home runs last night than Giancarlo Stanton. All right. Let's bring in Pat O'Brien now. Time now for our high school roundtable segment. Montoursville will play against Sealands Grove this week. Pat, welcome. It's great to have you back.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be with you. And high school football is in full swing, and I love it this time of year.
No question. We all do as we make the transition into September. Pat, of course, you'll hear the games on Eagle 107. Opening week, I think you expected to see an offense with a veteran quarterback in high gear. Is that what you saw?
Absolutely. We knew that going in, and we knew that Milton was down, but Milton had put up, they had more numbers, and they do have some athletes. So going into, we felt very comfortable in what we would see from Sealands Grove, especially as you mentioned, their senior quarterback, Logan Leiby, record setter, quarterback for Sealands Grove. First half, 400 yards, 5 touchdowns, didn't play a snap in the second half as Sealands Grove cruised behind him, and it wasn't a surprise, as you mentioned.
Yeah, not a surprise that he plays that way. Now, here's the other part. The game, the first quarter of the game, I think, took about 45 minutes. Penalties, mistakes, things like that. Was that just the opening night, or was it something to be concerned about?
Well, we did get talking about that, you know, and you wonder about a second scrimmage. Often you hear coaches say about how much a team will improve or the changes you can make from one week to the next. So I think a second scrimmage might have, since they didn't have that, creeped into it because you had a lot of unforced stuff, a lot of defensive linemen jumping, just being ramped up. So I definitely think that was a huge factor, and it went both ways. Both teams struggled in a big way to be able to just keep their composure and be in discipline around the line of scrimmage, causing a lot of penalties, as you mentioned, and just slowing a game down in that first quarter. It was quite unbelievable.
Pat, the next one up will be Montoursville. What's a quick thumbnail of this one?
Well, they're dealing with the loss of Bryson Mussina. Bryson Mussina right. threw almost 7,000 yards in his career, almost 70 touchdowns. Both district records, also two-time district champion. So they're dealing with the transition with that 10-3 team a year ago, district champion, as I mentioned. So those types of transitions, something Sealands Grove will have to go through next year if Logan Leiby graduates. So we could be seeing that up close and personal. But they're a good program, you know, and they've won a lot. So we expect J.C. Kiefer, coach for Montoursville, to make the adjustments. And as I said, you know, making a lot of adjustments from week one to week two. They rely on a lot of size and guys up front, some D1 prospects as well when you're talking about, you know, in their defensive line. So we expect a very different type team than Chickalemme saw a week ago, and definitely very different than what Selins Grove saw against the Milton Black Panthers a week ago.
Eagle 107 has the game tomorrow night, 6 o'clock the airtime, 7 o'clock the kickoff. Ryan Brandt will join Pat for that. Always a pleasure, Pat. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, Steve. Always enjoy listening.
Thank you. Pat O'Brien joining us. Next up, we'll go to WMLP because Steve Williams has the Tomato Bowl Warrior Run against Milton. Steve, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Great to see you, by the way, on Monday night.
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve. It was good to see you again, too. We had to get together like that a little bit more often, I think.
I appreciate that. Yes, I would like to do that very much. Very much. All right, Milton, I'm sure that realistically going into the opener, because it was Selins Grove, all right, I think we understand that. But now, what about this week? Is it a little bit different dynamic this week?
Yeah, absolutely it is. This is, you know, Milton has two teams you would call their arch rivals, Warrior Run and Lewisburg. And this, of course, is the first one, and it is a Tomato Bowl, which is really big for these kids. They've not won it in a number of years, and it's been Warrior Run that's beaten them two of those times in the last 3 years. So this is a big game for them. Now, what we saw last week, you're right, we weren't surprised at what we saw in the score. In the execution of the play, I think the coach had to be pretty happy with what he saw against the type of team that he was playing in Selins Grove, because Milton was able to move the ball. They are able to get the ball to some of the skill players, which are able to get open. And I know that talking with some of the Selins Grove coaches over the week, that was something they were concerned about. That gave them something to work on, too. But as far as the Black Panthers go, they really need to figure out how to get a running game going so they can make this passing game a little more effective. Phil Davis was very effective in his start. I think he had two smart plays that he made to avoid sacks, you know, and dump the ball out of bounds. So, I mean, he was playing very heads up. It looked very sharp, I thought.
You're trying to get a system down, you know, because, you know, this is a new system they have to adapt to. So, Steve, they've had a scrimmage, now they've had a game. In this third outing, is this where they're hoping that something settle in and the system now starts to take hold?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, with the biggest change is that they're throwing the ball all over the yard. We saw them going to the tight end, which really doesn't line up anywhere near the tight end. But he had, three different people in one drive that he threw the ball to. And, you know, one of the big guys to watch is Quaylen Rice. He's 6'4", and he stole a ball away from a defender and scored with it. So he's going to be their big receiver this year. But, again, they had trouble getting the ball moving on the ground. They had three different guys basically carry the ball. The inexperience that they have on the line has a lot to do with that. And of course, Selins Grove breathing down your neck, they were just nothing but terrific.
All right, so what are the keys tomorrow night against Warrior Run?
Well, again, defensively, the key is going to be to stop Pacey Howard.
Yeah.
He was switched to running back this year, and he's their big runner if they can stop him. Warrior Run likes to throw the ball, but they were not all that successful last week against Muncie. Milton, on the other hand, had some incredibly huge blown assignments where receivers were sometimes, you know, 5 and 10 yards behind the nearest defender. So they've got to tighten that up a little bit. Offensively, just improve on that passing game and maybe try and find somebody that can get the ball, you know, between the tackles. Alex Garcia is a 225-pound senior. He really didn't run it too much, but again, against a team like Selins Grove, you know, that's not surprising. I mean, they just had some horses in the middle there. So, you know, if they can get that going with a smaller Warrior Run team, that's going to go a long way for their improvement on the season.
Tomato Bowl coming up tomorrow night. Warrior Run at Milton. It's on WMLP. Steve, always a pleasure. And again, it was great to have share a couple beverages with you on Monday night.
Yeah, they were pretty good beverages, too. Yeah, it was good to see you again. And like I said, we'll have to do that again.
That sounds great. And Greg Wetzel was there as well. Greg, great to have you back with us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And it was great to see you on Monday night as well.
You, too. I enjoyed that very much.
All right, you got Lewisburg at Central Columbia. So give me your evaluation of what you saw in the opener from Lewisburg as to where there are a couple of building points and some areas where they need to be better.
Well, the game started out like no other game Lewisburg's had. First play from scrimmage, 78-yard touchdown run by a freshman running back. Third play, Hughesville had from scrimmage. Dylan Farinato stepped in front of a pass, ran it back 38 yards for a touchdown. So a minute and 30 seconds into the game, Lewisburg's winning 13-0. Then Lewisburg held him, had a third. It was third for Hughesville and about 18 yards to go. Defensive back is in perfect position to make a play. Jumps up and might have jumped a little too soon. Ball tips his hands, falls into the Hughesville receiver's hands, who was behind him and went 84 yards for a touchdown. After that, it turned into a scrimmage, you know, like a first-game scrimmage.
Yeah.
Lining up in illegal formations, motion, just things like that. So those are things they have to work on and can be corrected. What the coach was very happy with, though, was the play of his defensive line. His defensive line dominated the line of scrimmage. Hughesville had 45 yards rushing on 30 carries, and they had two big running backs, one 6'1", 215, another one 6'2", 210. So they did a really nice job. Defensive nose guard Jalen Dotson played a great game for the Dragons. He needed to be double-teamed because he was getting into the backfield the whole night. So I think his big thing that he has is his defensive line dominate, which they're going to have to do this week again. And he was happy with the running game because they ran for over 100 yards, which they didn't do last year until about the fifth game of the year.
Were the mistakes that you talked about once the wheels were starting to come off the wagon, were they a product of youth, or is it just the fact that it was just the early season?
I think it's more early season than youth. You know, again, this is the second year now where we've only had one high school scrimmage. So this is like their second scrimmage, and you could tell it. There was some sloppy play on from both teams, and usually this coming up would be the first game of the year, and they'd be a little more seasoned, ready to go. But I think it was more of the inexperience right then.
This game will be on the Valley 100.9. So what are a couple of things you're looking for tomorrow night when they take on Central Columbia?
I'm interested to see what Lewisburg can do to stop Isaac Gensimer. He's a junior tailback for Central Columbia. The last 2 years against Lewisburg, he's rushed for about 400 yards. Probably the best tailback I saw in terms of what he had to do for his team. You know, we played Southern Columbia, and they have great tailbacks, don't get me wrong. But Gensimer is their team, and everybody knows it. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can stop him and force their quarterback, who's it's only his second game this year, to beat them. And last week, Central had 457 yards of offense. Gensimer had 240 of that on his own.
Well, that game's on 100.9 The Valley. Tomorrow night, Central Columbia takes on Lewisburg. Greg Wetzel will be there. Greg, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. And last but not least, on News Radio 1070 WKOK, Shikellamy hits the road to take on Mount Carmel. The voice of the Braves is Kevin Herr. Kevin, week one, what did you think of the product you saw on the field?
Well, I can tell you this much. It was a big play product. You know, there were a lot of these huge momentum-shifting big plays early in the game. Joey Folk with a 54-yard touchdown run. Lucas Tilford catches a 59-yard touchdown pass from his brother Gabe Tilford. Josh Krieger recovers an offensive fumble, takes it 60 yards in for a touchdown, and Gabe Tilford, who had fumbled the ball earlier in the game as the quarterback, came in at the linebacker position and grabbed a 50-yard fumble and took it to the house the opposite direction. That was the first half. I mean, big plays left and right. I thought the offensive line looked good, not as good as they can be. There's a little bit of growth there in this young offensive line. Joey Folk had a few holes that opened up there early on, but did a lot of it with his second move or first moves at the line of scrimmage and when he came up on the linebackers. That's the nice thing. Offensively, they were able to move the ball pretty much any way they wanted with just a little over 300 yards offense and 158 on the ground with 154 in the air. That's probably the most balanced I have seen Shikellamy in decades from an offensive standpoint, Steve.
All right. Now, what about the defensive part of it? Now, you're able to get big plays on offense. Defensively, where maybe you have to go out, when you give up some, when your offense gets big plays, that means your defense might be out in the field longer. How'd they handle it?
Well, I think that's where the score is a little bit misleading. This game was 44-6 with 8 minutes to go in the third quarter. The only score in the game for Montoursville came after Gabe Tilford fumbles the ball about the 20-yard line, and Montoursville runs it in about three plays later. Until that point, until the second team got in late in the fourth quarter, that's the only time Montoursville was really moving the ball effectively. They held Montoursville to just 220 yards offense, most of those, as I said, coming in when the second team was in the game. But, you know, giving up four yards a play, 5 yards a play, again, when you factor in its first and second team, not a bad defensive showing. Early in the game, the stats were a lot different. That first half, Steve, Shikellamy holding Montoursville to under 100 yards offense.
When you play Mount Carmel, you better be ready to hit. But of late, they've been an up-and-down program. What are some keys to tomorrow night's game?
Boy, this is a game you can't look at last year's film at all and get a read on, because John Ayers used to be the quarterback. Now they move him to running back. Had 162 yards on 29 carries a week ago. Tom Ressinger, the sophomore quarterback, he fired off 91 yards rushing on, not 91 yards in the air and 55 yards on the ground with two TDs, so he was actually their number two rusher a week ago. It's a really tough team to read. They did not throw the ball very much against Loyal Sock, but defensively, Loyal Sock was able to move the ball in the air at will. As a matter of fact, Loyal Sock ended up with 260 yards passing in that two-point loss on Friday night. So if the... I think it kind of plays a little bit into this new Shikellamy offensive scheme. It's not your father's wing T anymore. It's wing T running game, but out of pistol formations, out of spread formations. They can really do a lot of dangerous things offensively that we saw here in week one that I know has a lot of coaches in the Heartland Conference a little bit nervous. And Mount Carmel, if you can control the running game, I don't think you're going to stop it, but if you can control the running game, you have a shot.
Kevin, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Pleasure, Steve. By the way, it's the 50th anniversary of the 1967 team that they'll be honoring at Mount Carmel on Friday night at the Silver Bowl.
Oh, that's great. And by the way, great to see you on Monday night as well, Kev.
Hey, it was a ball. We need to do this more often. Just for no reason at all, though.
No, I agree. I agree with that. I had a lot of fun with all of you guys.
And you know what? You guys had said something, too, and I noticed when we were doing the roundtable. And, Steve, you talked about this. One of the problems, I think, with this first game, and, Greg, you mentioned this a few minutes ago, one of the problems with this one-game preseason setup is there are a lot of five-yard penalties for formations, offsides, you know, different guys not coming out when the punt team comes on. Had a couple of illegal participation penalties, and I think that's something we have seen more in the last 2 years. Steve, you talked about this early in the show. What are some of the downfalls of this shortened high school football summer season? And I think that's it. It's fundamentals. And I think the tackling has been a little bit, I don't want to say poor, but a little bit weaker than it has been in past years.
Well, you'll see that on every level.
Absolutely.
Because people are not tackling this in the preseason the same way that they and usually by the end of the third game, I think by game four on every level you start to see much better tackling, because in the games they're tackling.
And it may be the only time they've really had much in the way of contact with another player all summer.
Right. Exactly. So here's the rundown of what's going on. It'll be Sealands Grove at home taking on Montoursville. Eagle 107 coming up tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock the airtime. The Tomato Bowl Warrior Run at Milton on WMLP. That will be a 7 o'clock kickoff with a 6:30 airtime on the Valley 100.9. Lewisburg is at Central Columbia, 7 o'clock the kick, 6:30 the airtime. And on WKOK tomorrow night, News Radio 1070, Shikellamy at Mount Carmel, 7 o'clock the kickoff and 6:30 the airtime. Gentlemen, thank you. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Kia had their best July in 5 years.
Thanks to the drastic discounts on all new Kias.
Guess what? SMC is doing it again in August.
We wanna see you in Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Those drastic discounts are extended into August at SMC. And there are 76 new Kias to choose from. 2017 Kia Fortes start at $15,997. 2017 Kia Souls as low as $16,698. The 2017 Hybrid CUV, the Kia Niro, starting at $22,879. Plus, Sunbury Motors Kia has accepted a special shipment of 5 2017 Serenos that are priced at just $24,989. And SMC has financing as low as 0% for up to 66 months. And all include Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors Kia, on the strip in Hummel's Wharf, and at sunburymotorskia.com.
Tax and tax extra. Offer expires 8/31/17. Restrictions apply. Warranty is limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer, go to kia.com.
To the bottom of the hour we go. We'll have news coming up. Our thanks again to Pat O'Brien, Greg Wetzel, Steve Williams, and Kevin Herb for joining us on our high school football roundtable, and also to John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. Now, we're hoping to have tomorrow Phil Davis and Ed Ruth.
That's right. Bellator coming to the Jordan Center in November.
Now, we've been told we're going to get them, but I'm from the Reagan administration, that era. Trust but verify. So, we've been told we're going to get them. I hope we do, because there are a lot of wrestling fans, I think, that would love to hear them and about what they're doing right now. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Greg Wetzel, Pat O'Brien, Kevin Herm, and Steve Williams for joining us on the show today. Our thanks to John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, who joined us in the second half hour of the show. Final half hour of the show is coming up. I want to get into this topic to begin this half hour. There's a lot of excitement surrounding this Penn State football season. The initial polls, which have Penn State in the neighborhood of 6 right now, we do know means in the end nothing. Because, but even though they mean nothing, because in the end they do not figure into the college football playoff committee. That's why they mean nothing. But they do give you an idea of perception. And Penn State is perceived as being one of the top 10 teams in the country. This is what it tells me. Penn State actually controls its own destiny to get to the college football playoff. Because they have the schedule that will allow them to do it. You got a good game with Pitt next week. Then you got to play at Northwestern. You got to play at Iowa. You've got Michigan at home. You're at Ohio State. You're playing a schedule that allows you to move your way through. Plus, you're playing a team that is perceived as being in front of you. And you're also playing a couple of teams that are just behind you. It allows Penn State, in my opinion, to control its own destiny along the way, that they're not going to need help from others if they take care of their own business. You like to be in that position, where instead of getting help to get somewhere, that you can take care of it yourself. And Penn State has the schedule that allows them to control their own destiny to get to the college football playoff. Now, maybe circumstances along the way will change that word. Maybe down the road, something happens and they're going to need some help. Okay. But as of today, they enter the season, in my opinion, controlling their own destiny, where they go one at a time, go through it, but they'll have the challenges along the way that will be noteworthy. And because they'll have noteworthy challenges along the way, it'll draw attention and allow them to make a move up the ladder. And they should have a perception nationally that they don't have far up the ladder to move to get there. Now, what the College Football Playoff Committee wants to do, we'll see. Because it's changed a bit. Former coach like Frank Beamer, for example, is now on it. That's interesting. But they have not been consistent in their charge in the first couple of years of this, the first 3 years of it. They have not been consistent, and here's the area I'm going to bring up where there's been a lack of consistency. It really reared its head last year because they've talked about, look, we'd like you to challenge yourself at some point in the non-conference schedule. Not all non-conference schedules are created equally. As we'll talk about next week, the ACC plays 8 games in conference, as does the SEC. But the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the Big 10 all play 9 conference games, which limits your non-conference availability. If you're wondering why, well, gee, South Carolina plays Clemson every year, and Georgia plays Georgia Tech, and Louisville plays Kentucky, and Florida plays Florida State. What do all of those matchups have in common? They're all SEC-ACC matchups, with each conference having 8 conference games and 4 conference availabilities. So they all have more flexibility to do that, even though none of those schools are in the same conference. In the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Pac-12, you have a limited scheduling window in Power 5. You have to be able to pay for your sports. And not every athletic department is created equally. Texas has 14 sports. Northwestern has 19. Penn State has to pay for 31 sports. And nobody wants to drop any sports, but Penn State still has 31 sports to pay for. That's why the 7-home game model is so important. They need that revenue from the 7 home games. That's why you have to have 2 of your 3 home games have to be those where you pay guarantees to get it done. You need that because you need to continue to finance your 31 sports. It's part of the formula. Football, men's basketball, revenue sharing, bowl money, all going in to a pot to pay for the 29 sports where the revenue versus expenditures does not equal out, a.k.a. loss. Men's ice hockey makes a little bit, about $250,000. Men's basketball makes about $5 to $6 million usually. And football, of course, makes up all the rest with its profits. Well, part of the formula to do this is to have the 7 home games. You lose your flexibility scheduling-wise. So back to the College Football Playoff Committee. Last year, as I pointed out several times, they played it very safe. The 4 teams that made it either have no loss, Alabama, or 1 loss, Ohio State, Clemson, and Washington. All right. Everybody else, except for Western Michigan, had 2 losses. They then took Clemson and Ohio State, flipped them 2-3. That meant Clemson got to wear the home jerseys and Ohio State the white jerseys, but Clemson won the ACC, so that was the statement there. And they flipped Penn State and Michigan because Penn State won the Big Ten title. Did it really matter if Penn State was 5 and Michigan was 6? No, or vice versa. Psychologically, sure. But Washington is the big issue here in what they did last year. Because you look at the non-conference games played last year. Of course, Alabama, they're always going to play a strong non-conference because they've always got that opening game. Like they open with Florida State this weekend. Ohio State played at Oklahoma last year. Statement. They went in there, they won. Statement. Clemson, among their non-conference, included a game with Notre Dame. I believe they had Notre Dame last year, right? Does that make sense? I think they did.
You know, plus they had South Carolina. Washington, and this is not, I'm not being facetious here. Washington had its toughest non-conference matchup last year with Clemson. I'm sorry, with Rutgers. With Rutgers. That's your toughest non-conference game? And that's where the College Football Playoff Committee, they played it safe, so I see that. But they've been inconsistent as to what non-conference means. Dick in Milton joins us. Hi, Dick. How are you? Thanks for calling.
Steve, well, today I just happened to read the USA Today projections for the Bulls and the playoffs, and their final four teams were Ohio State, Florida State, Alabama, and Oklahoma. Oh, I'm sorry. Semifinals, Ohio State, Florida State, and then Alabama and Oklahoma. I don't know whether Alabama and Ohio State. So consequently, Penn State, they had projected as an at-large bid playing Clemson in the Orange Bowl. And I'm not sure. I mean, that's just a projection like everything else is. Where teams are ranked is just a projection.
Right. That would put them in the New Year's Six game based on their projection. What's interesting is that that must mean that they feel that Oklahoma will run the table in the Big 12 because Oklahoma has to play at Ohio State next week.
Well, I'm just looking at here. Rose Bowl, they have semifinals, Ohio State, Florida State. Sugar Bowl, semifinals, they have Alabama and Oklahoma. But then the title game, I'm not sure how this happens, they have Ohio State and Alabama in the finals.
Well, they must feel that Alabama and Ohio State are 1-2 in this thing. Those are all very safe picks. I mean, those are all very safe picks that they made there, I think.
I saw this today. It was a projection on USA Today. And the other Big Ten team, other Ohio State, besides Penn State, that was like an at-large team with a high standing was Wisconsin.
Well, that makes sense because they must be projecting that both Ohio State and Penn State will beat Michigan, and that Wisconsin doesn't play either of them this year. Wisconsin ended up playing all three last year when they played Penn State in the championship game. They don't have this year. It's different for them schedule wise, and even though they've lost two of their linebackers, I mean for the year, which is just, I mean, I feel awful. One of them's a senior. They must be projecting that Michigan's going to lose to both Ohio State and Penn State in their projection, which then knocks them out of the New Year's Six.
Well, they had them playing on the Outback Bowl against LSU later on.
Okay.
And as I say, so basically be Ohio State and Alabama in the final matchup, and as I say, Penn State playing Clemson, I'm not sure, in the Orange Bowl.
That would make sense because the ACC team would be the home team in the Orange Bowl.
Right. And as I said, the Fiesta Bowl was Washington and Wisconsin, and the Cotton Bowl was USC and Oklahoma State.
Well, need to play the season, Dick. We'll just fast forward to that.
Yeah, but that means no more than where they rank a team in the beginning of the season to be. It's, you know, basically it's all conjecture. Right. I mean, I've seen teams projected to do really well, didn't do very well. So
Dick will do whatever it takes to jump right into wrestling season. Come on, Dick. That's
well. No, I'd be happy if we made the Final Four this year. Anybody would. But as they say, I just happened to see that today when you got talking about this. So.
Well, I mean, projections are fun because you can kind of throw darts up there and see how they play out. Because, you know, think of last year, for example. A lot of people were wondering if Alabama and Clemson would get to a title rematch. And, you know, Clemson in particular had to really fight its way through its schedule at times, but they did. But there are other teams. Notre Dame was highly thought of going into last season, did not do well. Michigan State was highly thought of, not in this corner, but highly thought of going into the season. They didn't do well. There were a lot of twists and turns along the way, and Penn State was sitting on the outside looking into the top 25 when it began. So that's what makes it fun. Now, so my point is, some of the expected happened last year. Clemson and Alabama both made it. And some of the unexpected happened last year, which made it intriguing.
Yeah. Could I throw one more thing at you? I have been thinking about for about 3 weeks, and I haven't got on.
Dick. I'd love to hear it.
Well, this is on the Star-Spangled Banner, the National Anthem. And I thought about this because every year it's an issue over the last few years. And to me, a simple solution, which I don't know anybody should be offended, was 3 or 4 minutes before the national anthem is played, anybody that doesn't want to stand gets to go into the tunnel or the locker room. They got to get about 3 or 4 minutes. And anybody that stays on the field and still sits or still refuses to stand doesn't play in that game. So it's that simple. You just leave the field. I mean, nobody's going to be. They'll know you weren't going. They know you were going to sit down if you're not there. And I don't think anybody should be real offended if they walk off the field and come back out when the game starts.
Interesting. You know what's interesting here, though, Dick? I don't think a lot of people realize this. At home, Penn State's not out for the national anthem.
I knew that, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, neither team is on the field for the national anthem at Beaver Stadium. On the road, Penn State's out on the field for national anthems, but at home, neither team here is out in the field. They usually play the national anthem around the 10 to 12, 13-minute mark when the teams go in, and then the teams don't run out of the tunnel again until about 3 or 4 minutes before the start of the game.
Well, this was more for the NFL because it's become an issue over the last number of years, and I'm just thinking if a guy leaves the field 3 or 4 minutes, stands in the tunnel, runs back out when the game starts, I don't know why anybody should offend anybody. They knew he wasn't going to. Or the other thing is, don't televise the national anthem. Then the only people that see are the people standing and sitting in the stadium.
You know what's odd about that is that for many years, the NFL, the CBS, NBC, ESPN did not televise the national anthem. Usually they went to a commercial break, they came back, and they started the game. It's been the last 2 or 3 years they started doing it again. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. I mean, they did it right after 9/11, but then they went for a period of time where no TV network broadcast the national anthem. They just didn't do it.
Well, I just kind of hate to see this be the big issue again at the start of the season, or any game. I just don't think it even should be. It shouldn't be an issue if they just get around it with an easy solution to me.
I mean, I have my own standard as to what I do, and I always stand up, I always put my hand over my heart, and that's what I do. I don't expect anybody else to do the same thing I do. I'll look down and I'll see people saluting those who are in the military.
That's what
others
I do.
Are standing with their hands down, but standing at attention. And then, of course, every once in a while, I'll see. And I know some of the Michigan players kneeled last year as well. But that's something where that's my standard. That's what I do, and I don't impose my standard on anybody else, and I don't want them imposing their standard on me. So, this may sound head in the sand, but I pretty much ignore it.
Well, I do. I would too, but everybody seems to make a big deal about it. Then, when they talk about it after the game, after the fact, they got to have something to talk about. Obviously, on these shows, so they talk about it. They show the guys. They rehash it. And then blah, blah, or they'll interview the guys that didn't stand, or they'll, you know. And it just goes on. Well, it's been going on and on now.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I feel some of this, you know, media-wise, you're talking about they want to talk about, so they're trying to create conversation, create controversy. I understand that.
Well, yeah,
I was listening to a radio show the other day where they were talking about Maria Sharapova, who's back from a PED suspension, and how warmly she was received at Flushing Meadow. And the host openly asked, would Serena Williams have been treated the same way? And I thought, oh, what are we going down this road for? Because that's a complete guess. She's a great, great champion that people in Flushing Meadow love year after year after year. They're disappointed when she loses. So I would assume so. But why bring it up?
Because they have to they have to fill timeout.
I mean, because it's just a total guess.
Yeah. If it wouldn't be for stupid questions, they could get done in half the time.
Are you telling me, Dick, I need to cut this show back to an hour?
No, I'm just telling you that. I'm just telling you that they've, you know, it's just like the pregame to the Super Bowl. Look how long it lasts. What, half a day? Day and a half?
Everything is so 24/7 now. You want weather, it's 24/7, which actually I've always liked the Weather Channel. I wish they'd do more weather. But, news is 24/7, sports is 24/7. You take the topic, you beat the dead horse, you beat the dead horse, you beat the dead horse. You do it 24/7. As soon as one host is done talking about, the next one steps in and starts doing the same thing.
I mean, they got to
Look, I probably do all the same things they do, so I don't know.
Probably the only good thing about 24-hour news or weather or sports or anything is there's kids today that learned that we had a civil war.
Well, they have certainly found out about that, and they've also found out more about it along the way. So
maybe didn't know that
at least
thing
that
ever
part
happened,
was very educational.
But getting back to the Penn State, I mean, I'm wishing them a good season. I think they're going to be very fine. They're going to have a fine year. Will they go undefeated? Maybe nobody will.
But like I said, they at least start the season, in my opinion, in a spot where they control their own destiny. In other words, if they keep going out, winning, taking care of business, they have a schedule which provides them the opportunity where they don't need a lot of help from anybody else to get where they want to go, as long as they keep handling the schedule and winning.
Well, hopefully they can have payback ready for Pitt.
Well, that'll be next week's topic. We're going to talk extensively about that next week.
I understand. I mean, I'm sure Pitt's decent, but Penn State has to, well, they have to get by Akron. That shouldn't be a big deal or a big problem. Okay.
No, I mean, look, they're the prohibitive favorite against Akron. There's no question about that. Pitt will be a big favorite with Youngstown State. Youngstown State went to the FCS final last year. They're actually pretty good. I think they're a little bit better, I think, than some people realize. So I think I'm going to get a better read out of the Pitt football team when I sit down to watch the Youngstown State tape as opposed to watching the one I saw with Villanova last year.
Well, hopefully after Saturday, they'll both be at least 1-0. It'll make the game more interesting.
Oh, no question. No question.
Thanks, Steve.
Dick, thank you. It's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for calling and for listening. We will come back in a moment. We'll take a quick break on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Attention, Central Pennsylvania. Now is the time to check out Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 25 brand new Elantras starting at $17,496. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is discounting all new Sonatas, $3,978. Choose from 24 Sonatas starting at just $18,967. All new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000 miles. Why would you buy another import for more money and not as good of a warranty when you can save thousands at Sunbury Motors Hyundai? If an SUV is on your list, Sunbury Motors has 18 Tucsons starting at $20,993. Attention, Central Pennsylvania. Now is the time to see what you can get for your money at Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And it's sunburyhyundai.com. Now is the time, and Sunbury Motors Hyundai is the place.
Penn State football is on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Penn State Nittany Lions are Big Ten champions.
Penn State football is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, Register Chevrolet, Turbotville National Bank, and Zimmerman Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Truck.
Join us on News Radio 1070 WKOK this Saturday for the Penn State Nittany Lions hosting the Akron Zips. The game kicks off at noon and pregame starts at 10:30 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Final moments of the show today are thanks to John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. Go back to the podcast and listen to that, because it'll give you a read on what's going on in Houston right now. Pat O'Brien, Steve Williams, Greg Wetzel, and Kevin Herr, all part of our high school roundtable to preview tomorrow's games. Montoursville will be at Sealands Grove and Eagle 107 at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock the airtime. Don't forget Sean Carey tomorrow night after the games with the wrap-up. Tomato Bowl on WMLP on the AM side, Warrior Run at Milton. Also, Lewisburg will be at Central Columbia on the Valley 100.9. And Shikellamy is at Mount Carmel tomorrow night here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Those three games kick off at 7 o'clock with 6:30 airtimes. Today's show has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.